Hey, welcome to the Growth Dummy summary of The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F by Mark Manson. The subtle art of not giving an F is like your smart but impolite friend explaining some great lessons from philosophy to you. Mark Manson shows how to live by your values so you can act with less hesitation, do what's most important to you, and stop worrying what people think. Our top quote from this book is, "Who you are is defined by what you're willing to struggle for," end quote. Are you looking for self-help advice that's different than usual? Then Mark Manson is the right author for you. He isn't afraid to speak his mind and say the opposite of what most popular self-help authors tell us. Instead of "think positive," he says, "you're always going to feel bad sometimes." Instead of "you can do it," he says, "you're not special." Instead of "say yes to everything," he says, "say no more often." But it's not all negative and depressing. In fact, this book's core message is very positive and uplifting. It says that we must carefully choose what's most important to us, then we must stop caring about anything outside of that. This book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, is clearly influenced by older philosophies like Stoicism, Buddhism, and existentialism. But it's written in a way that's easy for modern people to digest, with lots of humor, cursing, pop culture references, and Mark's personal stories. Mark Manson grew up in Texas, then graduated from Boston University, but he only lasted 3 weeks at a regular desk job before he decided to quit and try to build an online business to gain freedom. So in 2009, Mark started a blog about dating advice, which slowly transitioned the writing to self-help advice. His blog became very, very popular with millions of readers around the world who enjoyed his casual and direct writing style. And so during that time, his blog became super popular, his business became successful, and he also traveled for several years to over 60 countries. Then in 2016, Mark released this book, and it became a mega bestseller with over 13 million copies sold in over 60 languages. So now let's dive into my summary and commentary of this book and find out why this message has resonated with so many people. Lesson number one is the self-awareness onion. Discover the values controlling your emotions. So we all want to care less about what other people think. That's why this book has been so popular, right? Maybe if we could learn to give less of an F, then we could be more honest in our relationships and courageous in our careers, and our lives would overall become better. So the key to caring less is our values. This is the first big insight in this book. The key to caring less is in our values. Values are what we perceive as being important. They drive our beliefs, judgments, emotions, and actions. Values drive our whole lives, really. For example, if someone values family over work, they would probably say no to a work promotion that would mean spending a lot less time with their children. So what are your values? Well, it's not always obvious. We have to kind of uncover them. And you can discover your values by completing an exercise Mark Manson calls peeling the self-awareness onion. There are three steps. Step one is to feel your emotions. You see, many people are disconnected from what's happening inside them. So noticing what we're feeling is essential to self-awareness. maybe try remembering the last time you felt a very strong emotion. How did that feel in your body? Where was that emotion located? So try to pay more attention to those emotions in your body. Now, step two is notice what caused the emotion. What event, person, or stimulus triggered the feeling? For example, let's say a man named Bob felt worried because his boss didn't reply to his message for a long time. And next is step three, which is examine why you emotionally react in that way. So this final step reveals one of the unconscious values that's driving your emotional reactions. And this could involve you holding certain beliefs or metrics of judgment, like metrics that you judge yourself by. So going back to our previous example with Bob, maybe Bob was worried because he believes that a late message reply is a sign that his boss doesn't value or respect him. So that's one metric for judgment that he has. Getting a late message means I'm not respected. Now, and by the way, the truth is there could be many other interpretations or reasons for a late reply that are totally unrelated to how his boss feels about him. You know, maybe his boss is busy, or maybe his boss doesn't pay attention to his messages that much, etc., etc. And by the way, the best-selling business author, Simon Sinek, he wrote a similar idea, which he called the Golden Circle. Simon said that most companies are mediocre because they focus too much on the superficial layers of what they do or how they do it. But truly exceptional companies focus on the deepest layer of why they do what they do. In other words, they focus on having the right values driving all their team members. For example, most computer companies were boring because they always talked about what they did or how their computers were a little better. Their advertising was full of jargon like gigaflops, megahertz, and hyperbits. But most people don't care about that. But then Apple came along and captured everyone's attention with a powerful why. They said, we should think different. Apple is for people who think different, right? It's a strong value. And this why allowed them to revolutionize not just the computer industry, but afterwards countless other industries with their iPod, iTunes, iPhone, iPad, and EarPods. And you can learn more about this idea in our summary of Start With Why by Simon Sinek at growth.me. But I hope you can see how the ideas are similar. It's about going from those surface layers of what to those deeper layers of why of the values. To summarize this lesson, to care less about other people's opinions, you must become aware of what you find important. These are your values. So first, feel your emotions and then notice what causes them, and then examine why you have that particular reaction, and this will uncover your deeper values and beliefs and metrics for judgment. Now we have lesson two, good versus bad metrics. Choose the right values for your life. So now is a good time to discuss the differences between good and bad values. To put it simply, bad values are destructive to our well-being, especially in the long term. Bad values make us more miserable or sick. They harm our relationships to the people around us or to our society. Bad values often include fame, status, pleasure, always feeling positive, etc. On the other hand, good values create a better existence for ourselves and for people around us. They guide us towards fulfillment, connection, security, health, and well-being. Good values may include honesty, curiosity, perseverance, adventure, compassion, service, growth, etc. Good values are long-term. They consider what's best for us, not just now, but in the far future. So it's not about what feels good now. It's about putting that aside for what's best for us in the long term. Good values are also within our control. They're based on our actions and not the outcomes that we can't really control. For example, we can't directly control being rich and successful, but we can control studying and working hard. And good values are endless. The best values are never fully achieved, but they are ideals that we aim towards the rest of our lives. To illustrate how a shift in values can be life-changing, Mark Manson shares the story of musician Pete Best. Pete was kicked out of the Beatles just before they became incredibly famous. And for a while, he was very unhappy, as most of us probably would be. Yet over time, Pete changed his values from trying to be famous to connection and family. And so he built a very large and happy family. And when he was older, he would later say that getting kicked out of the Beatles was the best thing that ever happened to him. How could that be? Well, it's because choosing better values changed how he measured his life. And so the choice in values allowed him to live with much more fulfillment and happiness and well-being. To summarize this lesson, bad values create a worse existence for us and the people around us. Good values guide us towards more fulfillment and well-being. Good values are long-term, within our control, and never fully achieved. They could be, for example, honesty, curiosity, perseverance, etc. And now we have lesson 3, deathly wisdom. Purify your values by remembering we all die. As a teenager, Mark Manson was directionless. He had bad habits, avoided difficulty, and was basically scared to live. Then one night at a party, his close friend Josh died after jumping off a cliff into the water and drowning. The death was sudden, accidental, and senseless. Mark was shocked by the death, and it turned out to be a huge wake-up call that completely changed the course of his life. He gave up bad habits like drinking, smoking, and video games. He began exercising and taking care of his health. He started putting himself out there more and socializing and meeting people. He got his first girlfriend. He put in serious effort at school for the first time. And he started reading a lot of books too, which eventually led to his successful writing career. You see, being so close to death made Mark realize what was truly important in life. He saw where he was avoiding life out of fear, and so in the same way, we can all remember death to clarify our values, to find the right values to guide our lives, and to help us remember what is truly important in the end. For example, I know someone who likes to visit graveyards while thinking about important life decisions because it helps focus his mind on which values may be most important in the end. Now, 2,000 years ago, the ancient Stoic philosophers around Rome gave similar advice. In his journal, the Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius wrote to himself, "You could leave life right now. Let that determine what you say and think." End quote. In other words, remembering death helped Marcus focus on being the best leader for everyone instead of worrying about his individual political reputation. And you can learn more of those really great ideas from Stoic philosophy in our summary of Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. To summarize this lesson, Mark's direction in life totally changed after his close friend suddenly died. Facing the reality of death helps us to see what's truly important in life and what we should stop valuing or worrying about. So remember that you'll die to clarify your values. Lesson 4 is, life is suffering. Choose the pain you prefer. A long time ago, the Buddha said that life is suffering. This was not his pessimistic opinion, as some people interpret it. It was simply a statement of the fact that everyone suffers. Every one of us suffers. Buddha was born into a very wealthy royal family as a prince, but he found that life empty, so he became a poor beggar. But in the end, he concluded that rich and poor people both suffer just in their own ways. And perhaps, you know, one suffering is better than the other, obviously. Mark Manson had his own journey through wealth and poverty. He was born into a well-off family, but they had problems anyway. His parents divorced. He was expelled from school for having weed. And he was getting in trouble all the time. Then he got his life together and graduated from university. But he entered the adult world at the time of the huge 2009 financial recession. He spent 6 months living on his friend's smelly couch with almost no money. But then his online business that he was working on became profitable, and he was able to fly around the world visiting amazing places. But after some time, that life felt transient and lacking deeper connections or roots. So then he got married and settled down more in one place in New York. So it's a roller coaster ride. Now, many people dream of reaching a point in their life when they don't have any more problems, struggles, or worries. Unfortunately, Mark says that doesn't really exist. The biggest thing Mark learned from his journey in life so far was that problems never end. As your life moves forward, you simply upgrade to different problems and hopefully better problems. A simple example, people who are single may suffer from being single, but then people who get married may also suffer from being married. So the big question is not how can I avoid struggle totally. Mark says the big question is, what struggle do I want to have? What struggle or pain do I want to have in my life? Your answer to this question will point you towards maximum long-term fulfillment, happiness, and success. It is, in fact, the people who succeed in any field, they are those who actually enjoy the parts of it which are a struggle. For example, the people who love the pain of lifting weights are the ones who will spend hours in the gym every day and become champion bodybuilders. The people who are lifting weights just to look good will never go all the way. In fact, on Growth.me, we have a summary of Arnold Schwarzenegger's autobiography, which is called Total Recall, and he says exactly that, that he loves that process of being in the gym for hours every day. And speaking personally, how can I read so many books and publish my detailed notes and comments about these books? Well, because I enjoy doing it. And yes, it is still a struggle for me because it takes a lot of effort to learn for so many hours every day. It is work that sometimes I have to like push myself to begin every day, but it's the struggle that I prefer. To summarize this lesson, as Buddha said, life is struggling, which basically means everybody's life always has problems. There's no escaping problem. So the real question is, what pain or struggle would you prefer to have? Your answer to that question will reveal the right path forward for you. And now lesson 5, feedback loops. Allow yourself to feel bad sometimes. In the culture we live in, we can often get the impression that everybody else is always feeling great. I mean, we see endless grinning faces in advertisements and social media. So we may begin to believe that negative emotions are strange, uncommon, or even unhealthy. And this can make us feel bad about feeling bad, which quickly transforms into a downward spiral of feeling bad about feeling bad about feeling bad, and on, you get the idea. Mark Manson calls this a negative feedback loop. And these modern negative feedback loops can be broken by accepting our negative feelings. In other words, allowing yourself to feel bad sometimes. Remember that everyone feels bad on some days, even the people who are the most rich, beautiful, or famous. It's a very new attitude that treats each negative emotion that we have as a problem that must be solved. Maybe we should simply allow them to be there until they eventually pass. Here's a quote from this book. The desire for a more positive experience is itself a negative experience, and paradoxically, the acceptance of one's negative experience is itself a positive experience. End quote. Now, Jordan Peterson is a clinical psychologist and university professor. In his best-selling book, 12 Rules for Life, he also wrote about negative feedback loops, but in a slightly different way. He says people's whole lives can fall into these kind of negative loops. And to get our lives back on track, he offers a couple tips. First is get your sleeping and eating habits right. Dr. Peterson always asks his therapy clients about this because it has a very strong influence on our mood and brain. Some basic rules to follow include sleeping at least 7 to 8 hours every night, wake up at the same time each morning, and eat a breakfast rich in protein and fat, because that doesn't spike blood sugar that much. And the second tip is stand up straight with your shoulders back. Studies show that our body affects our inner emotions. And also, people will respond to you better when you carry yourself as if you respect yourself. And by following these tips, you can start to get your life on a positive feedback loop again. And you can learn more in our summary of 12 Rules for Life by Jordan B. Peterson. To summarize this lesson, our culture can make us believe that being unhappy is wrong, so we may get stuck in a negative feedback loop of feeling bad about feeling bad. The cure is to accept that we all feel negative emotions sometimes, no matter what our life situation is. And now lesson 6, positive rejection. Free yourself by committing to one thing. Now, we live in a consumer culture that is obsessed with more, having more, doing more, being more. Also, young people seem to be naturally attracted to freedom, variety, and novelty. So in his 20s, Mark Manson chased more to the limit. He dated lots of women, traveled to dozens of countries, and had a variety of business projects going on. Mark believed his life would be worse if he restricted himself to only one person, place, or profession. But in the last few years, his attitude has totally reversed, and today Mark is a big champion of commitment. He says, 3 things. First, commitment is saying yes to what you value most, and this means saying no to everything else, so rejection can be a positive thing because it improves your life. You spend more time with the things you value most. Mark says his marriage is far more meaningful than all his previous romances combined. Second, commitment opens up a new set of experiences. We often imagine that sticking with one thing will become repetitive and boring. The reality is that investing our time deeply in one thing opens up whole new types of experiences, like when Mark closed his other business projects to focus on writing. That made his career really take off because with that focus, he became a much more skilled writer. And third, commitment pays off better than variety in the long term. So variety is great in the beginning, but endless variety often means we're stuck in the superficial. For example, Mark found traveling to a new country the first time a mind-blowing experience. But when he was traveling to his 50th country, that offered very diminished returns. In my early 20s, I'm speaking about my life now, I also launched a small online business that gave me freedom to spend months backpacking in faraway countries as a digital nomad. It was a fantastic experience, but I also grew tired of that endless nomadism. Having a home in one place lets you build deep friendships, spend time with family, and plan long term. But I will say travel is still great within a reasonable limit. To summarize this lesson, many young people believe it's restrictive to commit to one person, place, or profession, but commitment allows us to invest our time in what we value most, and it opens up a new set of deeper experiences. And finally, we have lesson 7, anti-entitlement. Be okay with being unremarkable. One of the most complex ideas in this book is Mark's idea of entitlement. Mark Manson says we're living in a society that shapes us to be entitled in two different ways. First is self-aggrandizing entitlement. This is when someone believes they are exceptionally talented or special when they're not. And they'll often become blind to facts that contradict their belief that they're so great. They may also often twist the facts to maintain their belief. And the second way is victim-based entitlement. This is a belief someone has suffered exceptionally unfairly because of who they are or what other people did to them. It's another manifestation of being more special than other people, just in a different way. To better understand these two versions of entitlement, let's look at where they probably came from, according to Mark Manson. So first, let's examine the self-esteem movement. This was a psychological theory that was very influential in Western schools over the last few decades. Psychologists believe that kids who felt exceptional about themselves would have better mental health, confidence, creativity, achievements, etc. So they wanted to raise kids in a different way from the past, and they did. Kids received more unconditional encouragement rather than criticism, inflated grades, which means it was a lot easier to get A's and B's than in the past, and participation ribbons, rather than only giving awards to the most exceptional people. However, if we think about it, it's logically impossible for everyone to be above average, except to be exceptional or to be special. I mean, if you're lucky, then you may be, then you are average at almost everything, and maybe you're better than average at one or two skills. So that lie that we can all be exceptional caused maybe many people to develop an entitlement that is delusional and self-aggrandizing. And so they weren't really able to recognize their very real faults, weaknesses, or negatives. And they always twist the situation so it's other people or the world who is the problem. So a second cause of entitlement is modern media, according to Mark Manson. To get attention in traditional media or social media nowadays, you must be very exceptional. I mean, if we consider media a worldwide competition for views or attention, the only way to get that attention is to be the very best. Now, this is a problem because, like we said before, most people are average, and average people are simply ignored. However, there is another way to be exceptional, and that is to become an exceptional victim. People suffering some great unfairness also receive an outpouring of attention and support. So believing oneself to be a persecuted sufferer, that offers unique benefits above being average. Like we said, being average people are ignored, but the exceptional people and the ones who are at the bottom, very victimized, they both receive some benefits. And maybe this is why we're seeing a rise in this kind of entitlement that's based on being a victim. So what is the cure to these both types of entitlements? Well, Mark says we must accept that we are unremarkable. We're all average at most things, and that's okay. We can still enjoy our daily lives, we can enjoy our relationships and our work, while recognizing that we are not special from other people. And Mark calls this anti-entitlement. This viewpoint allows us to realistically recognize our weaknesses so that we can improve ourselves over time and have honest relationships with other people and with ourselves. But ironically, it's this kind of humble attitude that allows people to become truly exceptional at any skill. I mean, people who are blind to where they're weak, they can't improve. But if we can see where we are not that good, then we can improve those weak points, right? And this attitude of anti-entitlement extends even to victimhood. Marx says almost all of us have suffered deeply in the past, which means we're also not special in being victims. We are unremarkable victims, even if we have suffered some unfairness or abuse. As Marx writes, here's a quote, and let's be honest here, if you were to add up all the people who have some psychiatric disorder, struggle with depression or suicidal thoughts, have been subjected to neglect or abuse, have dealt with tragedy or the death of a loved one, and have survived serious health issues, accidents, or trauma, if you were to round up all those people and put them in the room, well, you'd probably have to round up everyone because nobody makes it through life without collecting a few scars on the way out. End quote. Now, this is obviously one of the more controversial parts of this book. Some online reviewers say it's easy for Marx to have this opinion because he's a white, straight dude born into a upper middle class family. And maybe those critics have a point. But I think we can understand this idea better by looking towards another author named Viktor Frankl. Viktor Frankl was a respected professor and psychologist. During World War II, he was sent to the German Nazi concentration camps because he was Jewish. And millions of Jewish people were put to death in those camps, including some of Viktor Frankl's family members. But he somehow survived all those years. He did endure years of cold, of hunger, and abuse. Viktor Frankl was clearly a victim, an exceptional victim. I mean, we still talk about the Holocaust and Auschwitz today all the time, so there's no doubt that he was a victim. However, even in those dark times of suffering, he refused to give in to helplessness or to think of himself as being a victim. He wrote, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of the human freedoms, to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way," end quote. And I think this is also Mark Manson's main point, that, I mean, even if bad things have happened to us, injustice, unfairness, well, we can't change those circumstances that we were born into. But what we can choose is what we're going to do about it, and often we can end up being the winners, even if we did start out way behind the finish line. And you can read more in our summary of the book Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl at growth.me. That book is definitely worth checking out, by the way. It talks about Viktor Frankl's experiences in those camps and what he learned and all these great ideas of how to find meaning and purpose in your life. But to summarize this lesson, our society tells us to believe we're all exceptional, but that is logically impossible for all of us to be special. So this leads many people to develop entitlement that is either self-aggrandizing or victim-based. The cure is to acknowledge that we're not remarkable, but enjoy our lives anyway. So to conclude this summary, I found this book fun to read. If you're looking for a fun read or a fun listen to an audiobook, check out the full book. Mark Manson is like a modern day philosopher with a very foul mouth. Of course, in this summary, I avoided a lot of those swear words, curse words. My favorite part of this book was his idea that we must choose the suffering we prefer. I like this because many popular self-help writers tell us that life can reach a certain point where everything is easy and effortless and positive, and I don't believe that's true. In fact, I think that type of thinking may lead us in the wrong direction. We may believe that we're doing something wrong if we're following our dreams, but we don't feel positive all the time. So I find Mark Manson's point of view to be almost a relief. And he says having the right struggle is where our lives find their meaning. Not to avoid struggle or pain or bad emotions, but to have the right struggle. And that's where we will find meaning. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed this, and I'll see you in the next one.